Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This episode of the Tell Us Something podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on December 8th, 2015 at the Wilma in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their story based upon the theme, Illumination Revelation. This edition of the Tell Us Something podcast comes to us from Andy Helzel and is titled Anne Sexton Pleasure Reading. Thank you for listening.
It's Thanksgiving, and I know it's Thanksgiving because of the attempt at a Thanksgiving meal that I'm being served. It's slimy green beans from a can. Potatoes that must have originated in a box, a roll of cranberry sauce. There are some other things less traditional, because I think they're trying to fill my plate. I'm a vegetarian, so there's no turkey. It's Thanksgiving, and I'm in the ICU alone. My nearest family is 1,500 miles away. All of my friends are scattered throughout the state and the country, visiting their own families. I move my food around on my plate with a fork, and then give up, push the green lunchroom tray in front of me, and crawl back under the covers. I was 13 the first time that I remember the feeling that was later labeled depression. It started as adolescent dissatisfaction with life. I waited for the phone to ring while simultaneously crafting the excuse that I would use to decline the invite, whatever it might be. I had this reoccurring experience when I was about that age. I lived in this bedroom with my two sisters, and it was large. Our three beds were spread out across this. I mean, it felt like it took up the whole upstairs of the house. Had green shag carpeting, dark green, and lime green walls. I lie on the bed at night, and the hallway light was on, but the bedroom light was off, so the way that the hallway lights fell on the walls made it feel like I was sinking into the bed. Like everything around me was getting bigger and more pronounced, and I was getting smaller and smaller until I was just barely visible. In the lunchroom, I just quickly grab one of those small chocolate cartons of milk and go to the hallway. And if I wanted to talk to anybody, I'd talk to the lunchroom aides. And the small joys that existed at that time were the ice cream cart, which surely Michelle Obama has nixed from school lunchrooms. But there was an ice cream cart that came, I think, once a week. And the elderly lady that ran it would chat with me while she dumped one scoop into my cup, and then I piled on top of that every possible topping that was available to me. But other than that, it was a dark, heavy cloud that hung over me constantly. And as time went by, it got heavier and heavier and lower and lower, so that if you looked out, it just blocked the view of anything that you could possibly imagine was in the distance. I figured out a way to leave the group of friends I had at the time, because they just knew me too well, and I found my way into the background of the popular crowd. The thing about the popular crowd is you don't actually have to be vulnerable or real, and they don't have to know you. You just have to go to some necessary parties, pretend to participate, and then you can fade. And it works. I basically quit everything, most things that mattered at the time. There were piano lessons, and because I was from the Midwest, I was an ice skater. There was gymnastics. There were other things. And when I thought about wanting to die, I would hold on to these little things that I had scheduled into the future. So, for example, I had Dylan tickets one summer, and I remember saying to myself, well, I gotta make it through summer, because I should see Dylan before I die, obviously. And then there was like a sense of obligation sort of mixed with a tiny bit of hope. And so I would think, well, I should graduate high school, and I did. And then I moved to Montana, and the relationship that brought me here sort of ran its course. And I was alone, and the more time I spent alone, the harder I got to hold on to those things, those Dylan shows, those, you know, obligations. And I spent a lot of time in my 7-story apartment of this very building, which at the time was nice but far less fancy than this. And I would look out at the city, down Higgins, out at the Clark Fork, into Karis Park, and I'd see the life of this city that I loved. And I'd feel empty. And I sat in the open window of that apartment, which this is probably still true. There are no screens on those windows. It's 7 stories up. And I wasn't, that obviously didn't bother me, but it was weird now that I think about it. And I looked out and I thought, I saw all these people like engaging in the world, and I just couldn't figure out what it was that they were feeling that made them want to do that, because I wasn't feeling that. And on the days that I felt like leaving the house, I'd walk aimlessly around downtown with my nose in a book. And the books were Sylvia Plath and Anne Sexton, and you don't have to tell me that those aren't the best choices when you're already losing it. And it became a daily or nearly daily occurrence where I thought about dying, and I thought about ways to die. And the heavy cloud that hovered over me was so pervasive, and I couldn't see anything into the distance. And the days when it wasn't emptiness, it was pain. And then I decided I couldn't think of any other way to make it stop, and I was sort of done trying to figure that out. So I tried to die. And when I woke up in the ICU, and a few days later it was Thanksgiving, I wasn't feeling particularly thankful. I was exhausted. And the idea of going out into the world and trying to figure out how to do this, how to engage, how to connect, was so overwhelming and so ridiculously frustrating. But I got discharged, and I went home to my parents' house. And my parents' house is the perfect Midwestern home. The lawn is manicured so gorgeously. And the white couch and the white carpeting is so perfect and so clean. And the piano, which is constantly dusted but never played, displays all the pictures and all the things the perfect Midwestern family has in their home. And we didn't talk about it, not really, not directly. And I stayed in the bedroom that's just across the hall from my parents, which is funny because it's not where I normally stay, but it's clear they wanted me to be close. And I put records on really loudly on my headphones. I listened to 2 Ramona over and over until the piercing harmonica was painful because I wanted to feel something. And I read and I wrote letters and I tried to sleep. And then one day I came across the search history in my mother's computer, and it said suicide and depression, and I'm pretty sure it said cure for depression. Because if there's a magic wand, she wanted to find it so she could wave it. I eventually convinced my parents that I was okay enough that they could buy me a return ticket home to Montana, that I would be better here than I was there with them, And when I got off the plane, I was a little bit better. Not because my mother waved a magic wand or because I found one, but because I had to be. It became a daily practice to find the times when the cloud lifted just a tiny bit and then take in that breath of fresh air and look at whatever I could see that just was barely in front of me. And I did that, and it's working. And this is where the story ends if I tell it 10 years ago or 5 years ago or two. But because I'm telling it tonight, it doesn't end here. Because then my friend Mikey died. And the pain of that was unbearable and confusing. It was the first time in my adult life that I saw suicide from the perspective of someone left behind. And Mikey was a husband and a dad, and like a wicked, smart, really hilarious guy. And I know everybody says all the good things after somebody dies, but this time it's true. And I felt all the empathy that I was going to feel, you know, that I knew, that I could imagine his pain, and I could imagine the emptiness, and I could imagine the desperation of wanting to go. But then I also felt angry. I felt angry that he couldn't access all the things that I couldn't access when I chose to go. His family, the beautiful faces of the people who loved him, all the things everybody says to you about why you should stay. I felt angry that he couldn't access that, and I felt angry that he was gone. And that was really confusing, because I only wanted to feel the empathy. And so all of a sudden, my mother's magic wand and the people who said to me, you know, but don't you want to stay for me and aren't you so grateful? They all came flooding back to me. And they didn't seem so fucking weird and so selfish. And that really sucked. There's not a lot I can do about that. There's still not a lot about I can do about it. All I can do is get off the stage, hug my people, and stay. Thank you.
Andy Helsall is a kitty and kid lover, verbal processor, social worker, and justice seeker. Bicycles are her first love. Feisty and at times outraged, Andy is a fierce champion of children and families and will forever be found at the kid table. She is relatively settled in Missoula with two awesome kids and one pretty neat husband. Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thanks to our title sponsor for 2015, the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. And thanks to all of our sponsors, Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years. The Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. The Top Hat also offers a unique dining experience centered on local, house-made ingredients. Dining made different. TopHatLounge.com. The Wilma, a locally owned and independently operated venue, the Wilma has anchored the Missoula cultural and entertainment scene for almost 100 years. Constructed in 1921 as a vaudeville house, the Wilma was utilized as a movie house for the majority of its history. In the 1980s, the Wilma began to once again host live entertainment. Now, the Wilma is a state-of-the-art live music facility within a spectacular historic building, thewilma.com. Thanks to Cash for Drunkards, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashfordrunkardsmusic.com. Podcast production by Ashley Nielsen. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and most especially to the storytellers, Mark Moss, Becky Spica, Andy Helzel, Carla Thailand, Ben Brewer, Joyce Gibbs, Marley Sporchers, and Bill McDavid. Remember, your story matters. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and learn about the themes for the 2016 season. Tell us something.org.